Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, our correspondent joins us from Jakarta with the tales of today's deadly terrorist attack there. A look at lessons learned now that Liberia is declared Ebola-free. What's it like to attend the Consumer Electronics Show?
It was fun. It was so interesting. There are so many things going on in technology world, but it was also exhausting.
And a look at the contributions of actor Alan Rickman. It's right here on The Voice of America. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for today's coordinated bomb and gun attack in the Indonesian capital that left 7 people dead, including all 5 attackers. Correspondent Steve Herman has arrived in the city and joins us on the line. Welcome, Steve.
Yes, hello, Susan.
What do we know about this terrorist attack?
We have the head of the Jakarta Provincial Police, who is the former head of the elite counterterrorism unit here in Indonesia, saying that this was indeed the work of a group under Islamic State, a military wing headed by an Indonesian who's believed to be in Raqqa, Syria, and that they will find those who masterminded this attack.
This included guns and explosions.
Yes, this occurred at 10:40 in the morning. People reported hearing up to 6 explosions as well as gunfire, and it was obviously a coordinated attack. Some security experts who have analyzed the video have said that it appears that part of the attack was thwarted or did not occur as the attackers intended. And the authorities here are saying this attack was meant to imitate the Paris attacks.
This attack was in a sort of a central area of town.
Absolutely. The core of it was at a Starbucks, a U.S. Coffee chain. This was very close to the offices of the United Nations here, as well as a number of embassies, and that explains why foreigners are among the casualties.
And I guess the investigation will continue, even though they already have one person in mind.
Absolutely, but this does appear to be intended to have been carried out at a strategic point where they would be able to target foreigners. We're told that this Starbucks coffee shop that was attacked is frequented by diplomats, and Starbucks has announced that they are shutting all of the outlets in Jakarta temporarily.
The government has warned about these attacks in Indonesia.
Yes, there was an alert that went out last month expecting something to happen late December or around New Year's, and that they had intelligence that something was being planned, and they had mobilized quite a security squad to go to public places as well as churches and other venues that they thought might be targets of the attack. But this has caught everyone really by surprise here. It's the biggest such attack in more than 6 years, when we had the bombings of two five-star hotels in Jakarta.
And there was also that Bali attack many years ago.
Yes, and there was also another attack on a hotel in 2003.
Thank you very much, Steve, for speaking with us from Jakarta.
You're welcome, Susan.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry condemned the assault, saying, quote, "These acts of terror are not going to intimidate nation states from protecting their citizens and continuing to provide real opportunity, education, jobs, possibilities of a future. There is nothing in any act of terror that offers anything but death and destruction. And so we stand together, all of us united in our efforts to eliminate those who choose terror," end quote. There has been an outpouring of support for Jakarta on social media in the aftermath of today's attacks. Michael Lippin is here in the studio. Michael, what hashtags have people been using on Twitter to show that support?
Hi, Susan. Well, one hashtag that's really resonated the most today has been a phrase in the Indonesian language, Bahasa. And that phrase is Kami Tidak Takut. And that means we are not afraid. I'll spell it for you. That's K-A-M-I-T-I-D-A-K. T-A-K-U-T. Kami Tidak Takut. Now, that hashtag has been used by Indonesians, of course, to show their defiance of the terrorists, and it's also been an inspiring message that others have been echoing around the world. Another hashtag that's popular in Indonesia today is hashtag Jakarta Berani, which means Jakarta is brave, and Berani is spelled B-E-R-A-N-I. Now, one hashtag whose words might seem familiar is Pray for Jakarta. Sadly, we've seen similar hashtags pop up on Twitter repeatedly in recent months in response to other terrorist attacks around the world. Of course, many will remember hashtag Pray for Paris, which gained a huge amount of attention after the Paris terrorist attacks of late last year.
Michael, what other trends have you seen on Twitter related to the Jakarta attacks?
Well, I've seen a couple of pictures get a lot of attention on Twitter, and one is this symbol, which I can show you right here.
Looks a little bit like the peace symbol.
Exactly, and you'll remember after the Paris attacks, there was another image that went viral. It was a modified version of the peace symbol made to look like the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
So what they've done here for the Indonesians is they've taken the Indonesian National Monument, which is in Jakarta, and put it in the middle of that circle. So that's getting a lot of retweets on Twitter today. And another one is kind of a lighthearted one. It's a picture of an Indonesian man grilling satay. And someone tweeted that, you know, this person was doing the grilling in Jakarta right after the attacks, as if nothing terrible had happened. We can't verify that photo, but what people have done is they've taken the phrase keep calm and carry on, which is a British phrase, and they modified it to say keep calm and bakar satay, which means keep calm and keep grilling the satay.
Okay. Well, it's nice to see there's a little humor out there during this tragedy. Thank you very much, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
The ability of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, to create faster and more accurate forecasts has greatly improved now that its new supercomputer system is up and running at record speed. The U.S. agency's powerful computing system is made up of two Cray XC40 supercomputers. Each of the giant computers has the capacity to process and analyze Earth observations at quadrillions of calculations per second. NOAA Administrator Catherine Sullivan says that their newly upgraded computing system will allow the agency to process a huge wave of data gathered by its new observation platforms. The system will enable NOAA to introduce a number of much-needed weather, climate, and water-related computer model upgrades this year that will help forecasters make and quickly deliver better weather prognostications. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The World Health Organization says the most recent outbreak of Ebola in Liberia is over, bringing the number of cases in West Africa down to zero for the first time since a regional epidemic began in early 2014. The WHO says more than 11,300 people have died and more than 28,500 have been infected since Ebola was first recognized in Guinea in March 2014. Reporter Carol Pearson has been speaking with medical experts in this field, and she joins us now here in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Susan.
What have you found out, Carol?
Well, I was talking to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and he is the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. And he said that there are really three things that they've learned. In fact, there's this huge paper coming out today of experts from all over the world commenting on lessons learned from Ebola. And Dr. Fauci said that you could break it down into public health issues. And that's one lesson learned. You have to be prepared for public health emergencies, no matter what country you're in, whether it's rich or poor.
I think it's very important now for the world to fully realize that outbreaks like Ebola in West Africa have occurred with the degree of ferocity that it occurred because of the lack of a good healthcare infrastructure in those West African countries. And it's important that we need to build sustainable healthcare capacity in low and middle income countries, and that the countries themselves need to realize that that is an important priority for them, and they need to put the resources in.
Dr. Fauci also told me that NIH, the U.S. government, USAID was involved, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention were involved, and he said we need to help build the clinic infrastructure so that they can carry on now that the epidemic is over. And that was part of the problem. Experts agree. In these three countries in West Africa, some of the major hospitals did not have running water, did not have electricity. If you don't have running water, how can you keep the place clean? If you don't have electricity, think of how that impedes delivering medical care. The other thing that Dr. Fauci said, that they learned a lesson from patient care. For example, when this first broke out, Zaire, Ebola, it was 90% fatal. However, they found out if they gave patients fluids, kept their electrolytes up, then it decreased to being somewhere between 20 and 30% fatal. So it's not as horrible, although it is horrible, but it's not as horrible or as completely untreatable as we thought at the very beginning of this epidemic.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Carol, for your insight.
Thank you, Susan.
Fine dining is usually reserved for those who can afford the typically costly meals. But in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, some of the top restaurants are donating gourmet meals to a local homeless shelter. International Edition's David Byrd has details.
Sanford Restaurant is considered one of the best upscale eating establishments in the Midwestern United States. Its menu includes such items as char-grilled loin of elk with maple polenta, balsamic grilled romaine, and tart cherry reduction, or lacquered quail and crisp veal sweetbread with grilled peach and braised collards. But now Sanford is one of eight fine restaurants that provide meals for the city's largest publicly funded homeless shelter, the Guest House. Volunteer Dale Ryan helped start the project in 2011 when he saw what some of the men at the Guest House were eating. He says a good meal is a very practical way to help the men get their lives back together.
Food goes right to the brain. These guys need nutrition to get their lives back and to be able to go out on the street, find work, and get their health back.
Ryan, who used to work in the food industry, approached some of his friends in the restaurant business. He says that he was surprised by their willingness to help.
I would sometimes go home at night and find that I would be crying in the car because I was so overwhelmed because I was not getting any rejections.
The meals the men at the Guest House receive are the same quality that paying customers at Sanford and other restaurants receive. Chef Justin Aprahamian, a winner of the prestigious James Beard Award, says that he and his crew take special care when preparing meals for the Guest House.
We take a lot of pride in what we send over to the Guest House. You know, we're not cutting corners on anything we're making for them. I mean, we're shopping at the same farmers markets and ordering from the same purveyors.
On this particular night, Aprahamian is making a cassoulet.
Cassoulet is kind of a classic French stew where you get a combination of, you know, it would be some duck meat, classically sausage, pork, beans, and you know, a bunch of vegetables kind of all stewed together.
Guest House resident Billy Pollard says the meals he and other residents enjoy are always something special.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. That was really good. I like the way they cook that food. I like the way they prepare it too.
Robert Howard is another Guest House resident who is on the verge of leaving the shelter after being off heroin for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I can tell it's not like a person that made it that from home. It tastes better than that. I don't know that much.
Howard says that even when he is out of the Guest House, he will make sure to schedule return visits on the gourmet nights. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Coming up on International Edition, the latest and the greatest in electronics and the acting contributions of Alan Rickman. The Consumer Electronics Show is a big draw for gadget fanatics. The 2016 event was just wrapped up in Las Vegas, Nevada, and attending was our own George Putich. He's back with us now in Washington. Welcome, George.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It must have been fun to attend that conference.
It was fun. It was fun. It was so interesting. There are so many things going on in technology world, but it was also exhausting because our listeners probably cannot comprehend how big this show is. It's huge. Thousands and thousands of exhibits. Many more thousands of people moving around, everybody shooting with their either their cell phones or cameras, but it was fun. It was fun.
And what are some of the highlights?
For me, most impressive things are the 3D printers. They have progressed so much that now industrial 3D printers can print in metal. Then they can print it titanium, and they can print things like replacement bones for a human body. It's unbelievable.
It is amazing. It's very amazing.
Yes.
I heard there was some interesting news about drones, too, drones that won't run into other drones.
Yes. Drones are getting better. They can sense the obstacles, and they can avoid obstacles. And I actually saw a ballet performed by six drones in a relatively small place. They fly around like synchronized swimmers, and they do not hit each other. So they're really, really very good.
Anything about the future? What we can expect down the road?
We can expect more Internet of Things, gadgets to be interconnected, to speak to each other, and to learn. And we can also expect more robots. One of the highlights that I would like to mention is the telepresence robots that are becoming very affordable.
What exactly is that, George?
That is a robot that actually replaces a person at the remote site. Let's say you are sick at home and you have to be present at the office for very important meetings and moving from one office to the other. You have a simple robot that moves around. You can control it from home, from your computer. No special equipment needed. The robot has your picture, a live picture. People can see you and you can see them because it has a camera. So actually, you can sit in your armchair and be present at meetings, move around the offices, talk with people, you know, do all kinds of stuff, kinds of stuff that you usually do in the office.
Well, it certainly would get rid of the commuting problem we have in these big cities.
Yes, that would be another advantage.
Okay, well, thank you very much, George. I'm glad you had a good time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? Smart shoes. Smart shoes made by DigitSol. DigitSol says these are the first connected, interactive, heated, and shock-absorbent shoes, all supposedly controlled via your smartphone. Using the Smart Shoes app, these shoes will loosen or tighten around your ankles and also track your movement, your calorie burn, and even the wear and tear of the shoes themselves. Using the app, the walker or runner can input data to measure the shoe's shock absorption and let you know when you should replace the shoes. The company says the battery will last for several days and can be wirelessly recharged with a device that fits over the top of both shoes at once. Are these shoes a bit gimmicky with a futuristic but weird look? Maybe. But so what? The bigger problem may be the price. DigitSol's smart shoes are set to go on sale in the U.S. and Europe in September for a hefty $450. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossons.
Alan Rickman, a British-born actor, has died at the age of 69 of cancer. Reporter Penelope Polu joins us here in the studio to talk about his life. Hi, Penelope.
Hi, how are you, Susan?
Fine, thank you. And you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. Alan Rickman, he had many different acting roles in his life.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, we all know him as Severus Snape from Harry Potter. He came back for all eight films, and he became internationally famous because of that role. What was so important about him was his wit. incredible, serious face with a very commanding voice. He was quickly established as one of the main characters in the Harry Potter franchise.
And he had a wonderful voice.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the depth of that voice. He started on TV as with Romeo and Juliet in the 70s. And then he went on to play in theater in the Shakespeare Royal Company. He won 2 Tony Awards. In 1998, he started playing on Broadway as Vicomte de Beaumont in Dangerous Liaison. And the show was a small show, but again, it won acclaim because of his uncanny ability to immerse himself into the characters he played. Of course, he became more of a villain in most mm-hmm. of the films, actually, that he was cast, like Die Hard.
I was going to mention that one.
Yeah.
A good movie.
Very good film. Very good film. So he had a softer side. He played softer romantic characters. He was very seductive in that not so attractive, you know, persona of his. He was not one of these glamorous actors, but there was something about him that was very captivating.
What about his personal life?
He has been hailed as a wonderful human being. Most of the actors that played opposite him were devastated to find out that he died. Of course, one of the celebrities that tweeted first was J.K. Rowling, the writer of Harry Potter, who actually said exactly that, how devastated she was and how we lost an amazing person. And same with Emma Thompson. She said, "I lost my best friend. I just kissed him goodbye." You know, so obviously he left a tremendous legacy, not only as a person, but as a family man and as a human being, as a friend.
And you mentioned his family. He's survived by his wife, I understand?
His wife and children, oh. I believe, yeah. And the battle with cancer was very short. So most of us were surprised by the sudden death. It wasn't like with David Bowie that we knew he had a lengthy battle with cancer. This one came out of the blue, at least for me. I was shocked, and just anecdotally, I went to my daughter the first thing I did this morning, who is an incredible Potter fan, and I mentioned it, and she started crying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Penelope, for stopping by the studio.
Sure. Anytime, Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us today for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since October, 5 people connected to a publishing house in Hong Kong have mysteriously disappeared. The publishing house, Mighty Current, has published books critical of Chinese Communist Party officials, including Chinese President Xi Jinping. Gui Minhai, the owner of Mighty Current, vanished October 17th from a seaside apartment in Thailand. Later that month, 2 staff members of Causeway Bay Bookstore, which is partially owned by Mighty Current, went missing during a trip to mainland China. A 4th man connected to the publishing house also disappeared in October, most likely in Hong Kong or Xinjiang. On January 1st, reports surfaced that Li Bo, a business partner of Gui Minhai, had gone to visit a warehouse in Hong Kong used by the publishing company and did not return home. Hong Kong media have reported that security camera footage showed a mysterious man wearing a cap following Li Bo, both when he entered and exited the elevator of the warehouse. An eyewitness reportedly saw several people push Li into a van after he exited the building. Thousands of residents of Hong Kong took to the streets to protest the disappearances. Among other slogans, protesters reportedly shouted, "No to cross-border abductions," and "Stop political kidnapping." Hong Kong's chief executive, Leon Chun-ying, expressed concern over Hong Kong's residents' rights and safety and said it would be unacceptable if mainland Chinese authorities were seeking to enforce laws in Hong Kong. That, he said, would be a breach of the Basic Law, a document that enshrines the principle of one country, two systems, and guarantees Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy and its own legal system. The Basic Law also guarantees freedom of speech in Hong Kong. At a press briefing, U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States is disturbed by reports of the disappearances of 5 people associated with the Mighty Current Publishing House. We share the concern of the people of Hong Kong regarding these disappearances, said Mr. Kirby. We noted the January 4th statement by Hong Kong's chief executive expressing concerns about the potential implications of this case, and we share those concerns.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.